From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what is up, beautiful people? Welcome to another edition of Current Sports with me, Al Martin. It is Monday. Yes, the work week has cranked up once again. July 20th, 2015, we've got a great show in store for each and every one of you. Right now, I feel bad for you guys who are not next to a television as we speak, because the British Open is partaking, of course, in its final round. It was pushed because of the just terrible weather they've been dealing with out in Scotland for the past 5 days. But I tell you what, folks, it's coming down to the wire. We will give you an update on just who will hoist that coveted jug in Scotland. You don't want to miss any of that. We'll also talk about the Detroit Tigers, as they have now fallen to below 500. Oh boy, it just keeps getting worse for the Tigers. Also, an interesting investigation into University of North Carolina athletics. Lance United finishes its season at home with a W, and we'll wrap today's show up with, of course, weekend winners. We'll take your calls all the way up until 2 p.m. If you want to weigh in on anything that we discuss here on the show, call 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But hey, without further ado, how about we start the show like we always do? Here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this July 20th. A moment that the Baltimore Orioles had averaged fewer than 3 runs and batted .53 with runners in scoring position over their previous 8 games. Baltimore, yeah, all that went out the window as they pounced on the Detroit Tigers starter Justin Verlander during a 6-run fourth and cruised to a 9-3 win in Sunday's rubber match at Comerica Park. Verlander, who was making his 6th start since missing the first 2 months of the season with a right tricep strain, was pulled to a smattering of boos after 3 2/3 innings of work, his shortest outing since August. Now, by taking the loss on Sunday, he matched the longest streak of winless starts over his 11-year career. The Tigers dropped to below 500 at 45-46 for the first time since April of 2013. It's their first time being below 500 during the second half of the season, even further than that, dating back to 2010. We'll dissect where the Tigers are currently right now in the course of their season and put in perspective just how bad things are in just a sec. A parking lot, if things, you know, looking at the game, if the game wasn't that, you know, wasn't bad enough, a fire near a parking lot near Comerica Park during Sunday's Tigers game destroyed 7 unoccupied vehicles during the game. The fire began shortly after 3:30 p.m. near the center of the parking lot by Gratiot and Bobian and was extinguished within minutes by Detroit fire crews. Now, the official cause of the fire was not yet determined. Just an all-around bad day in downtown Detroit. All right, Grant Holmes tied a professional high with 6 innings pitched, rolling the Great Lakes Loons over the Lansing Lugnuts 7-2 Sunday at Dow Diamond. Now, the final game at Dow Diamond begins today at 2:05 p.m. Jesus Tinoco takes the ball for the Lugnuts, looking for his 3rd consecutive quality start. Now, the Loons' starter is yet to be announced. The final day of the Lansing United's 2015 season was a good one. On a beautiful, sunny Sunday afternoon in East Lansing, Matt Brown scored 2 in his final match for United, and Freddie Gomes sealed the deal with an incredible long-distance strike as the Hops held off the visiting Erie Commodores 3-0. Now, United finished with a record of 6-4-2 in the NPSL in their sophomore season. And again, folks, right now, as we speak, the final round of the 2015 British Open in Scotland is taking place. And man, oh man, I'm watching it right now, folks. And Zach Johnson, birdieing the 18th hole, is now tied with Mark Leishman in first place at 15 under par. But I tell you what, Jordan Spieth, the man who can make history by winning his fourth major of the year, is at 14 under on the 15th hole, so he still has three holes left to play and can still make that history happen. We'll keep you updated as that round continues here on the show. Kyle Busch rolled on Sunday at New Hampshire Motor Speedway, winning for the second straight weekend and the third time in the past four Sprint Cup races. It is the second time Busch has won back-to-back races, dating back to July of 2008 when he won eight races that year. Michigan's own Brad Keselowski was second, followed by Kevin Harvick, Joey Logano, and Dale Earnhardt Jr. Clint Dempsey scored on a fourth-minute header, adding a pair of second-half goals for his first international hat trick in the United States, routed Cuba 6-0 on Saturday to reach its eighth straight Gold Cup semifinal. Now, Dempsey's 57 international goals are 10 behind Landon Donovan's American record. And FIFA Executive Committee, their executive committee, I should say, met today and has decided to set February 26th of next year as the date for a vote to replace embattled President Sepp Blatter. According to the Associated Press and BBC, a majority of FIFA's 209 confederations has asked the UEFA president, Michael Platini, to run. Platini has not publicly stated whether he'll run. On June 2nd, Blatter said he would leave his post after 18 years at the helm of FIFA, just 4 days after he won a fifth four-year term by beating Jordan's Prince Ali bin al-Hussein in a vote. Well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. Call in right now to give your thoughts. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527.
I think there's a sense of urgency that's going to need to take place. We need to play better, consistent baseball. We need to get, better starting pitching. I need to do a better job. A lot of guys need to do a better job just being consistent. And really, it starts looking in the mirror with myself. I need to be more consistent. My last start, I say, okay, that's it. Let's keep going. And kind of reverted back a little bit in the fourth inning today where I was against Toronto where – just didn't execute out of the stretch in big situations.
We got hits. We just didn't score runs. That's something we talked about quite a bit. We've gotten our hits. We just don't seem to score runs. When we do score runs, we don't seem to pitch. When we don't pitch, it's tough to score enough runs. So it's nothing is in sync in terms of the offense and the pitching coming out, showing up on the same day.
Welcome to the show. You are tuned into Current Sports. As always, I am your host, Al Martin. Happy, happy Monday, as many of you have returned to work and rev up for another work week after one beautiful weekend. Oh boy, was that great or what? I went to the pool. I played 18 holes on Saturday. Just max taxed and relaxed. It was a fantastic weekend, folks. But I'm glad to be back behind the mic to kick off another exciting week here at WKAR's Current Sports. First off, what you just heard throughout that montage was, of course, Detroit Tigers pitcher Justin Verlander and the manager of the Tigers, Brad Ausmus, as they both addressed what went wrong this past weekend against the Baltimore Orioles. Just really... for Tigers fans out there, you got to just be, I don't know how you're doing it. I don't know how you're holding yourself together after watching what took place yesterday. So much went down. The Tigers, this kind of puts everything in perspective here. The Tigers dropping below 500 for the first time in 2 years since April of 2013. They're 45-46 right now. And it's actually their first time below 500 during the second half of the year since 2010. things are bad. We're going to get to the Tigers in just a sec. But right now, as we speak, the sports world is in a buzz when looking at what is currently taking place out in Fife, Scotland at the British Open. It is this is exciting stuff. I mean, you know, this is one of those things. This is probably one of my more memorable moments when watching golf, when Tiger Woods is not involved. Because if you look at it, I mean, it's so jumbled up at the top of the leaderboard right now. Just to give you guys, right before we took the air, literally, I want to say about like 20, 25 minutes ago, Zach Johnson hits just an unbelievable putt on the 18th hole to tie the lead along with Mark Leishman. And now the pressure's on the rest of the field because Zach has actually finished up his round. He's sitting at 15 under. You got Mark Leishman. You got Jason Day, Jordan Spieth, Luis Oosthuizen, Sergio Garcia. Sergio, I think, is out of contention right now. So it's really, you know, if you look at Spieth, Oosthuizen, Day, Leishman, those are the guys really vying right now to hoist that British Open jug. Because, you know, Jason Day, you know, he still has three holes to play. He's on the 15th right now. He's through 15, along with Spieth and Oosthuizen, and Mark Leishman, who has really just come out of nowhere. I mean, just looking at his round alone, he birdied the first hole, birdies 3, 4, and 5, birdies the 9th, birdies the 10th, then the 12th, and has parred out up until a bogey on 16. So right now, it's just about hanging on. I really do think that Zach Johnson's score of 15 under is the magic number. I think if you stay at 15 under, at least right now throughout the course of the round, you will win or be tied for the W, point blank period. Because again, yeah, I mean, that's the magic number. Zach Johnson has 15 under, so hey, that's what you got to beat. I don't see anybody going 16 under. I mean, because you look at the conditions. I was watching the round. I've been watching it all morning. And, you know, the rain has just been coming down, and these players have been playing in hazardous positions, all through the weekend, really. But today it really started to rev up, and I'm sitting there saying, oh, no. I really hope they can play through this whole thing because I don't want to see another rain delay here at the British Open. We've been seeing it for the past 4 days now. But, you know, they played through it. It seems as though the rain has let up a bit. And now you are starting to see some epic golf played. I'm watching right now, and Jordan Spieth is actually, I believe, on the 16th hole, and really trying to conjure up some magic. I really thought that Spieth was going to be rattled, and this is something that, you know, hey, this kid has nerves of steel. And this is the first time I actually really got to see it in person, live in person, watching him throughout a round, because I thought that double bogey that he had on the 8th hole was going to rattle him and really take him out of his game. You even heard the announcer say, oh my goodness, how can he bounce back for that? I mean, this could potentially take him out, especially around that 8th hole. That's when things started to, you know, the conditions of the course, that's when the rain really started to come down and pour on. He played through it, and just like he's done throughout this tournament, just like he's done winning 3 majors so far on the tour, he's answered a bogey or double bogey with birdies. Chirp, chirp, chirp. He hits that double bogey on 8. Then he birdies, number 9 and 10. And I'm just seeing here he just birdied the 16th as well. So it is going to be fun down the stretch. We're so glad, you know, during this whole fiasco that you are still tuned in right here. If you're not by a TV, don't worry. We got your back, and we'll give you updates throughout this entire hour, okay? I want to invite right now the man behind the glass, our engineer for WKAR's Current Sports, Isaac Constance. Isaac, I mean, is this entertaining or what?
Oh, it's the best golf tournament in a while because you've got it's a 5-horse race for the first place right now. So, of course, like you said, Zach Johnson, Mark Leishman, Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, and Luis Oosthuizen. So all of those guys are really contending, trying to pull each other back, go for first. And all of them have a real great chance. I can't say enough, though, about Jordan Spieth. You talk about this kid, he wasn't on his game. After round 2, it looked like he might have been out of it, and I'm not sure, but he just fought back, shot a 66 in round three. Mm-hmm. Of course, that one is because Leishman, who shot a 64. But Jordan Spieth is, it reminds me of Rory McIlroy a couple of years ago. It really does, except Jordan Spieth's breaking even more records. Mm-hmm. So Jordan Spieth continues to blow me away. And then a little bit further down the list, Danny Willett. He's tied at sixth right now, and he's actually an amateur. They were talking about it on the Jack Ebling show last night.
Mm-hmm.
If he won, then he wouldn't have gotten the cash money. It would have gone to the second place guy because he's an amateur. But after today, you can definitely bet he will not be an amateur. He's also fantastic.
Without a doubt. And another name that really stands out is, Dune. I believe that's how you pronounce his last name. Paul Dune, who actually throughout the weekend, he actually had the lead in the British Open, I believe, after the second round going into the weekend. But Paul, you know, he shot four over today. He was in contention to really make some noise, but he shot four over today, and that really put him out of things. But Paul Dune has been a guy who, you really want to keep an eye on. I believe Paul Dune is also an amateur, and he's also another name that came up, as possibly being, as his career goes forward, a force to be reckoned with. So watch out for him as well. But with that birdie, another update here, with that birdie that Jordan Spieth just had on the 16th hole going into the 17th, there is now a three-way tie for first place at the British Open. Unbelievable stuff. And I saw a highlight. Mark Leishman actually had a chance to birdie the 16th hole himself, but that turned into a bogey for him on that hole. So unbelievable stuff. So a three-way tie for first place at the British Open. We will keep you guys updated throughout this hour. Things are going to get very interesting as we continue. Folks, our phone lines are open. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Quick thoughts, Isaac, on the lowly Detroit Tigers right now, who again yesterday, oh boy, Justin Verlander, he had to go through a 6-run fourth inning. And eventually the Baltimore Orioles throughout that game were able to defeat the Detroit Tigers 9-3 in Sunday's rubber match at Comerica Park. Just not a great outing for Justin Verlander. And actually, when he was taking out the game, you could clearly hear through the speakers of your respective televisions the smattering of boos coming from the crowd. I never thought I'd see the day where Justin Verlander would be booed by the crowd at Comerica Park. He's been such a beloved Tiger throughout his career. At one time, he was the best pitcher in baseball, bar none. And now to see how his game has sort of diminished over time, it really kind of takes you aback and sort of puts in perspective just how bad this team is playing right now. I honestly think, I mean, right now, they're not competing for an AL Central Division Championship right now. I think you can kind of throw that out of the window, Isaac, because as it stacks up, I think they're like 10.5 games in back of first place, which, of course, goes to the Kansas City Royals, who are holding down things in the AL Central. They're 10.5 games in back of them. They're actually, what they need to focus on, if anything, if there is any hope in this season left, they need to focus on that wild card spot, which as of right now, they are sitting 4.5 games in back of a wild card spot to make the playoffs. But the Kansas City Royals, I mean, they've won 2 in a row. They don't show any signs of really having a dramatic slump to give the Detroit Tigers a chance. And just looking at what went wrong yesterday, I mean, first off, of course, yeah, Justin Verlander remaining winless in 6 starts after giving up 7 runs, 8 hits, and 1 walk over 3 2/3 innings yesterday. Ian Kinsler was ejected in the bottom of the 3rd inning. Nick Castellanos left in the 5th after being hit in the face by a ground ball. Saw him during the press conference yesterday. He actually had a shiner on his left eye. It didn't look good for the Tigers yesterday. And, Yoenis Cespedes hit an RBI single in the 5th, but he left with a tight quad. So you had, Yoenis Cespedes going out with an injury. Nick Castellanos taking a ball to the face. Ian Kinsler getting frustrated, throwing down a bat and getting ejected, which I don't think he should have gotten ejected. And then Justin Verlander having an atrocious outing.
everything that could have went wrong yesterday for the Detroit Tigers did. And, you know, again, I always say with this team, looking at these, you know, this past month and a half, there's nothing that you can point to on this team to say this is why this team is going to turn it around. I honestly think they have to do something before that trade deadline hits on July 31st, Isaac.
Oh, well, now one question is whether they should call it a season, whether they should hang the boots up, get some young talent in there, and say, you know what, we're sorry, but this just isn't going to be our season. Sell David Price, try to get something for him in case they lose him, as they most likely will in free agency, and get nothing in return. So there's a question, because the Tigers, to me, and I think they should sell. I think they should shop Price. I think they should make other players available. Obviously not Miggy, but not JD, but players like Rajai Davis, other players who might be a part of the team, but not, you know, really the core foundation. And of course, Price is part of that foundation, but I just see another team beating the Tigers out to his contract, giving him a larger one, especially how Detroit left Scherzer loose last year. I see it being a similar situation with similar money involved. And the Tigers are not going to win a championship this year. I don't think they're going to win a division championship. I think we can almost say that for sure. I don't think they're going to make the wild card. So if I were the Tigers, I would sell. I would focus on the future. And the other thing I want to touch on is how Brad Ausmus said, because we've said several times this year after games, Brad Ausmus looks totally lost.
Disengaged.
Totally out of it.
Yeah, emotionless.
And again, in that montage, you heard Brad Ausmus say, well, the bats, and we're batting well, we're pitching fairly well, we just can't get it to happen on the same day. Well, that's your job as a manager. That's something for me to say as an observer. As a manager, you need to make sure that those are coordinated, that you're batting well and pitching well all the time. It can't be so erratic and inconsistent.
And again, you know, again, those two stats I just mentioned, you know, about the Tigers being below 500 for the first time since 2008, that really puts in perspective just how bad this team has been. Because, you know, the Tigers, you know, have had stretches throughout the past 2 or 3 years where you look at it and say, oh, my goodness, what is going on here? But to be below 500, that has been a conversation that you haven't really had because it hasn't happened in so long. So that sort of puts into context where this team is right now. The starting pitching isn't consistent at all. The bullpen, don't get me started on that. I tell you what, the bats have been, you know, they've sort of awakened. I mean, hey, you get three runs yesterday. But in a way, looking at Jose Iglesias, I mean, what, he was like, what, 4 for 4 yesterday. He's been, you know, pretty consistent. It's actually Jose Iglesias' 20th multi-hit game of the year. And the second time he has had 4 hits in a game, tying his career high. Iglesias has hit safely in 21 of his past 32 games. But it's been kind of an up and down roller coaster ride with the rest of the lineup. Having Miggy out doesn't help. So again, yeah, and the big question here is, what do you do when looking at this trade deadline that is coming up on July 31st? I mean, do you buy or do you sell? And right now, again, you mentioned, Isaac, about the contract of David Price. And looking at other contracts on this team too, I mean, do you let those contracts go and bring in some new talent, some young talent? But I tell you what, you know, I kind of agree with Drew Sharp in today's Detroit Free Press when he says it's really no fun in you know, talking about April of next year and opening day of next year and next season already when we haven't even gotten through July. So again, this team right now is 4.5 games in back of a wild card spot. Again, you and I, Isaac, agree that they're not winning the division. It's Kansas City's right now to lose. So from a logistical standpoint, where does Dave Dombrowski go from here? And I truly think that if they don't make a wild card spot and don't make the postseason this year, I think you seriously have to have a conversation on whether or not Brad Ausmus should continue to be the Detroit Tigers manager. Because I don't know. Because at the end of the day, you know, I kind of go with intuition when looking at certain leadership of respective teams. You know, sure, the Tigers are having a down year this season. So you look at the manager and you want to, you know, you want to look at those. I think those press conferences are so important, Isaac, because what that manager or head coach of any organization says has to give you a feeling that, okay, He knows what's wrong, and he has a solution on how to fix it. Just having an overall grip on where this team needs to head. You know, just having two firm hands on the steering wheel. I honestly think right now that Brad Ausmus is totally confused, doesn't know what to do. And you don't get that reassuring feeling that, okay, Brad Ausmus is going to try and figure this thing out and go down this year kicking and screaming and fighting for the season. I don't get that feeling and have not gotten that feeling anytime I have seen Brad Ausmus address what's wrong with the Detroit Tigers.
Alan, you talked about the hitting. Just the Tigers' bats have been working. Just to retouch on my last point, the Tigers yesterday had 14 hits. 14 hits, 3 runs. The Orioles had 14 hits. Guess how many runs they scored? 9. That's the difference. The Tigers can't string hits together. Part of that's the lineup. Part of that is Brad Ausmus' fault for not putting hitters where they should be, right next to each other. So, not getting Iglesias more runs and different things like that. But also, I mean, you look at it, the Orioles, look at the schedule, who they've played recently. The Orioles, the Twins, they dropped 3 of 4 to the Twins, 2 of 3 to the Orioles. These are not great teams. These are games. This is an easy stretch for the Tigers right here, and they're losing games. Just imagine when the good teams roll around, the Tigers will be totally out of contention, in my opinion.
I agree. And it's really, you know, and they have the talent to do it. You know, Justin Verlander talked about how it's inexcusable when you look at the roster of the Detroit Tigers this season. It's inexcusable to be in the position that they are currently in. So, hey, where do they go from here? I'm curious to get your thoughts. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Quick update from the British Open. Mark Leishman has finished up his final round at the British Open, and he remains at 15 under par, tied with Jack Johnson atop the leaderboard, also with Jordan Spieth, who still has 2 holes left to play. Will Jordan Spieth pull this thing off? Who knows? But he's got 2 opportunities to do it, still having left the 17th and 18th hole to play. This is going to be fun down the stretch, folks. This is our first break, Isaac. When we come back, again, we will continue to give you updates on the British Open. And we will also chat about an investigation into the University of North Carolina athletics. You want to hear the details of this one, folks. Don't touch that dial. You are tuned in to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870. Hey, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Got to give you guys a reminder that this week on Current Sports TV, we have yet another fantastic athlete that will be joining us from, of course, the Michigan State Athletics wheelhouse. That being Tori Franklin, who has just wrapped up her senior season as a Spartan. Of course, finishing as a Big Ten Women's Indoor Triple Jump Champion. She was also a second-team Indoor All-American, repeated as Big Ten Champion in a triple jump mark with a mark of 13.31 meters. I mean, her accolades are just through the roof, through the roof. She's from Illinois, and we've had her on the radio show. Actually had her on right before she took off for the NCAA championships. When she fared pretty well. I believe she finished 11th overall in the triple jump. But she will join me live in our Current Sports TV studios. Of course, last week we had another MSU athlete by the name of Darian Harris, Michigan State star linebacker for the football team. So we continue that trend with Michigan State athletes this week. So if you want to be a part of that live studio audience and get a chance to meet Tori Franklin, just simply go to WKAR.com.
MLB.org and sign up online for free. And concerning guest here on Current Sports Radio, I really wanted to get a Lansing United player on today's show. Chatted with Jeremy Sampson though this morning, and we weren't able to do that due to scheduling conflicts. But we hope to do that throughout the week. Get one of those players on throughout the rest of the week here on the radio show, because of course Lansing United finished up their year yesterday afternoon. Isaac Constance was actually there, so he'll bring his coverage from that game later on in the hour. Tomorrow, we'll have Richard Kincaid, of course, Detroit sports broadcaster, to talk about what is going wrong with the Detroit Tigers. And a fantastic slate as the week continues. So you are going to want to tune in right here to WKAR AM 870. Oh, boy, well, I tell you what, this news has been, you know, I think really, it hasn't really gotten that much press so far. Well, I think part of the reason why, Isaac, is because, of course, the British Open is taking place right now, and everyone's looking to see what's going to happen with Jordan Spieth and company. But also it's because it was posted early this morning, and I almost missed it because, you know, no one had it on ESPN, no one had it on Yahoo Sports or any other sporting outlets. But I went to SI.com and saw it, and, you know, it concerns, of course, University of North Carolina football players. Benefits that were received by those players that led to NCAA sanctions back in 2012. Looking at the details of this report, there were search warrants, actually five search warrants, that were filed as a part of a case involving Christopher Hawkins, a former UNC football player who authorities say violated the state's laws on college athletes' relationships with sports agents. Now, Hawkins, who was dismissed by the Tar Heels in 2004 and later transferred to Marshall, was arrested in May and charged with acting as a middleman between UNC players and agents. In 2010, 14 University of North Carolina players missed games because of an investigation into whether they received improper benefits. Eventual NFL draft picks Robert Quinn, Marvin Austin, and Greg Little were at the center of the investigation. Now, the unsealed warrants reveal that UNC players received cash, were paid for signing memorabilia, and were guided toward particular agents. This is a direct quote from the AP report. Quote, in February 2013, Quinn told investigators Hawkins provided $13,700 to steer him to agent Peter Schaefer and financial advisor Marty Blazers. Now, Hawkins shared a house with former Tar Heels and Pittsburgh Steelers running back Willie Parker, where athletes will find envelopes of money marked with their names. Quinn and Little were ruled permanently ineligible by the NCAA before the 2010 season, while Austin was suspended that year and ultimately dismissed from the team. Glaring stuff, Isaac, when it comes to this report, because this is the type of story that we from time to time every so often hear about in college athletics. Players who go and play at a respective university like University of North Carolina and play a respective sport there. And, you know, first off, looking at the lifestyle that a student athlete lives, a lot of student athletes out there believe that the amount of work that they put in on the gridiron, on the hardwood, whatever sport it may be, the strenuous schedule that they have to balance when it comes to athletics and, of course, what they do in the classroom, with that being said, they should receive more compensation for what they do. You know, when I read a story like this, one of the, documentaries that come to mind is the Fab Five documentary, Isaac, of course, recounting the Michigan Fab Five men's basketball team with Jalen Rose and Chris Webber. And I remember Jalen Rose talking in that documentary how, you know, hey, we're rocking Nike socks, and you know, they were really the ones to start the baggy shorts in basketball. You know, not the whitey tidy tight feel shorts back in the day. They kind of set that trend of saying, hey, let's put some bag to these shorts, and you know, they made that cool along with wearing black socks with black gym shoes on the basketball court. I mean, it was sort of a pretty cool trend. And, you know, how Jalen Rose, he talked about the story, how he was walking by a store and saw, like, a, you know, Fab Five something. I don't know what was being sold, but it had the name Fab Five on them, whether it was shorts or socks. I'm not sure. Maybe it was tennis shoes. And he's like, wow, people are making money really off of our mantra. And, you know, it was so interesting to see that because, again, I do believe this kind of is a great segue into our discussion that we had last week on the NCAA losing the case to these student athletes out there, which had to do with EA Sports and in the college, you know, college video games that countless student athletes were, you know, their image and likeness were used in. And because of that, the, you know, the courts ruled that, hey, you need to pay these athletes because you used their jersey numbers, their height, weight, size, just their entire image in the video game and profited off of it without those athletes receiving a dime. So there's a lot of athletes out there to believe that, you know, taking into account all of that, they should be paid. And some go the non-traditional route, the illegal route that goes against the NCAA rules to do so. And this is one of those stories that directly violates what the NCAA tries to monitor. And, you know, this is the first time, though, I've really seen a story where you got, you know, you got student athletes working with sports agents and, you know, directly profiting in that conversation. What's your reaction to this story, Isaac?
This doesn't really surprise me because you look at this investigation, it's been going on for 5 years. You know, it's about time they really came out with something definite because back in 2010, 14 UNC players were suspended for a game. And this isn't too much news. This is more proof than news. So I think it's interesting, but I also just think, you know, it takes us back to the general discussion of, yeah, maybe players do deserve a little bit of this incentive money. Now, the way this was done was totally covert, totally. It was collusion. It was not in the right way. Mm-hmm. Players, in my opinion, players should be paid for their service. But I also don't think that this is the way to go around it. Helping, like, just flat out under the table money, helping players sell in-game jerseys, things like that. I think those rules need to be changed. But I also don't think the way to do it is just to do it totally under the table without the permission of the NCAA.
And how about this news? You know, of course, you know, this is talking about more specifically the football team. But not too long ago, we were talking about the University of North Carolina basketball team being involved with an academic scandal, you know, taking classes, you know, that weren't a part of the, you know, normal curriculum at the college university just so that student athletes that played for the basketball team could pass and good grades to pad really that, you know, that GPA and be eligible. So, I mean, what is going on at North Carolina? That's the big question. And the other question is just how prevalent is this type of activity at other universities? So, and again, that wasn't too long ago. I mean, we're talking about, you know, June of this year. So, like, you know, a month ago when this North Carolina academic scandal came out and everyone was talking about that. So just more bad press for the Tar Heels. And I'm pretty sure that the ADs over there are just pulling their hair out. So, folks, what do you think about that? 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. And, you know, it kind of goes into the political argument as well, because when you talk about coaches who, I mean, basically their job is to come to a university, you know, especially if it's a big university like a North Carolina, your job is to go out there and win games. And if your players aren't getting it in the classroom, hey, who knows? I mean, depending on the personality of the coach, some coaches will go to extreme lengths to make sure that their respective athletes pass a certain class or to make sure that their student athlete, you know, is eligible throughout an entire season, because they know at the end of the day, their job is on the line if they don't win. Now, I'm not saying that, hey, you know, Roy Williams had a direct connection to what took place with his basketball players. Hey, maybe he did know something. It's hard for me to believe that, hey, you are a head coach of your team and you don't know I tell you what, you should know what's going on academically with your players, point blank, period, and you should find a way to fix it. That's what a good coach would do. So it's hard for me to believe that Roy Williams didn't know fully what was taking place, because these are your players. This is a part of your responsibility as a coach. I get it. You know, you're supposed to go out there and respond to the X's and O's and make sure you win games. But you're also, you know, that's what I think makes Tom Izzo such a great coach, because he generally makes sure that his players are getting it off the basketball court. And again, that's kind of ironic I say this with what's happening, you know, with the recent news that we've heard out of the Michigan State basketball wheelhouse with Alvin Ellis III and Aaron Harris and their quarrels off the basketball court. But I assure you that Tom Izzo is going to make sure that those two players get it. But, you know, comparing that to what's happening at UNC, I mean, dude, I mean, you, at some point, enough is enough. And you got to make sure that your players are performing to that standard, if you know what I mean.
Well, that's the thing. Some programs, you expect to have certain violations. Now, there's a big difference between athletes not performing in the classroom and getting under the table payments. That's a huge difference. One is the university's directly at fault. The other is the university should have gotten more involved. There's a big difference between those two. But you're right, some programs are notorious for this, so UNC is unfortunately joining that list.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and looking at the details of that story, UNC took advantage of African-American studies courses. There were multiple courses. Those courses, according to the allegations, allowed the students to receive quality grades without having to show up for class, turn in papers, or take tests. As a coach, you got to make sure. You got to make sure that your players are crossing their T's and dotting their I's. And if this class, you know, was implemented just to make sure that these students had good GPAs, there's a lot wrong with that picture. And a lot of fingers need to be pointed, not just the University of North Carolina coaching staff at the end of the day. Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's go to our phone lines right now. We've actually got Michael from Saginaw on line one. Mike, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show. Thank you again, man. You were talking about the scandal down in North Carolina about the academics and everything else. I mean, I think now that the athletes that they could recruit, could they ask what the kids' curriculum is and everything, or who is the job of what the kids want to be? Is it the parents' job? Is it the coach's job? Is it the people that the outside influences? What, speak up on that.
So you mean as far as when they come to a university, what they want to study and what they want to go into? That's what you mean, Mike?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
I think that's up to them at the end of the day. I think when a respective student comes to any university, I mean, especially a student athlete, when they come to a university, it's up to them to decide what that quote unquote plan B is going to be and what sort of degree they want to chase once they get to university. I think that's up to the individual. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, when you're talking about the support staff, when you get there, I mean, it is what goes on with these universities, I believe, is when they get there, the support staff don't be there to counsel these athletes. They wind up want to make the athletes up mind for them, and then that's when they get in trouble. But I blame too that in the eighth, the way they're recruiting kids in the eighth and ninth grade now, they know they're being recruited for college, and you got to be able to do college work. Why?
Right.
That's what I don't understand it. I really don't.
And I truly believe that, especially when you talk about Division I basketball at that type of a level, I think that when a kid who's highly recruited goes to University of North Carolina to play for an historic program under the tutelage of Roy Williams, I think that the number one thing on that kid's mind is, of course, how can this program get me to the NBA? How many years can I get by in college and then declare for the NBA draft and be a high draft pick? Academics, for the most part, if you are a highly touted recruit playing for a program like that, academics are secondary. That is your plan B, as I just stated. You're not putting that as a priority. And because of that mindset, entering a university like University of North Carolina,
That mindset hinders you because you aren't placing an importance on academics to begin with as a student athlete. You're more like an athlete student rather than a student athlete.
Well, that's right, because I was thinking about on that level, that basketball-wise, it's the University of Kentucky. Now, they get all over John Capriati for just recruiting all these ones and dones and stuff. But I figure, I look at it at this way. If you're gonna, if these kids know that they're playing basketball all summer long now. They're playing USA basketball. They're playing age groups like from 17, 18, 19. Then you got the World University Games. Then you got all these foreign, they're going overseas to play foreign teams all the time, club teams all the time during the summer months too. That academics to them is the whole system now. It's all about getting to the NBA. It's not about academics. You know, like most of them got it in their heads that, like, they not, if it's the NBA or a bust.
Right.
And I hate to say that. It's because the money is just so huge in the NBA now. Those guys signing big contracts. Even Draymond Green, look at how big of a contract he was. You know, it's funny. When you bring that topic up, I think every player that isn't a superstar, they all want to be Draymond Green now.
Yeah, that's true. Right. And you know, a guy like Draymond Green gives that type of player hope, because Draymond is a guy who stayed 4 years in college. I actually graduated in the same ceremony as Draymond Green. He went across that straight stage and got his degree. And, you know, he wasn't a high draft pick. He was drafted in the second round of that 2012 NBA draft.
Yeah.
He goes in and has to earn his keep. And he does. And now he's sitting at a 5-year $82 million deal. He gives that kid or that player hope that you don't have to be a top draft pick. You can just, hey, do it the blue-collar way and prove everyone wrong. And, you know, hey, that has a trickle-down mindset as well, Mike.
All right, then, man. I've got to just call you and give you a holler, man. I've been grinding, like I said. So
yeah, I haven't heard from you in a while.
It
was refreshing to see that across my board that you called in, Mike. Thanks a lot. Always a great call, man.
I appreciate it. Thank you, man. You take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. I am seeing here that Jordan Spieth has actually bogeyed. He bogeyed the 17th hole. And with that being said, though, he still sits tied in first place, along with Mark Leishman and Zach Johnson, both of those players who have actually finished up their rounds. So if Jordan Spieth birdies the eight, well, I'm seeing here, just came through.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
He pars. Yeah, he parred the 18th. So that means that we are going to have, we may have it actually, because I see that Luis Oosthuizen, he's actually on the 18th hole, and he needs to birdie in order to be a part of that leader group, and he's actually on the 18th hole right now. But we have a three-way tie at the top of the leaderboard at 15 under. This thing is going to go to a playoff, I believe, Isaac.
Oh, I think so too. And that 17th hole that you mentioned that Spieth bogeyed, that's a tricky hole. Two of the top five bogeyed that, including Zach Johnson, who, of course, had to birdie the 18th hole in order to compensate for that. So
exactly.
Tricky 17th hole. Two of the top five bogeyed it. And, yeah, there goes our boy Spieth. That was our prediction. So,
yeah.
Oh, well, I guess let's root for Zach Johnson.
At least, you know, Jordan Spieth at the end of the day, because I'm seeing here, according to my leaderboard, he's tied. He's in a three-way tie. So if this thing goes to a playoff, I mean, he'll be in the playoff. He'll be playing along with, you know, Zach Johnson, Mark Leishman, and whatnot. So, you know, we'll see what, well, now my leaderboard. So
minus 14.
So he's 14 under then. I tell you, man, technology. So he's 14 under at the end of the day. Okay. So Zach Johnson and Mark Leishman will probably go to the playoff then. Oh boy, interesting stuff. Unless Luis Oosthuizen can birdie the 18th, and then he'll be along with Johnson and Leishman playing in that playoff. But it would have been really, really cool though to see Jordan Spieth, you know, win four majors in a year. That hasn't happened in who knows when. All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we'll put a bow on this edition of Current Sports by talking about Lansing United and their season finale yesterday at home. Isaac Constance was actually out there, and he will bring us coverage from the East Lansing Soccer Complex, and we'll wrap things up also with our weekend winners. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870.
I'm going to miss it, but I have to control my emotions and make sure I put on a good performance for the Sons and Ransom of the club, just to remember.
Really happy for Matt. Obviously, he had some chances in the first half that didn't go his way, so his response in the second half I thought was great. You know, he showed some good perseverance to come out early and get that chance, whatever a minute, whatever it is, into the second half. Took his chance well, and obviously had another one he took well. So he's been just a massive part of our success as a club. You know, leading goal scorer, and it's going to be hard to find players in the future, I think, that can carry the weight that he has for the club.
He's the oldest one, so obviously he has a lot of experience, like as a person, as a player as well. He used to play on a really high level back home, so he obviously has a lot of experience, so we kind of listen to him. He's kind of a natural captain, and so we try to listen to him. And on the field, obviously, he scored goals like he did today, so
yeah,
he's helping us. It's still good to like finish like this on a home game. I scored a goal, but the most important is that we got the win today.
Give me and my family a lot of memories. Met a lot of amazing people, and I've loved every minute playing for the club. Like I said to Jeremy earlier, it's just like family, basically. And yeah, I'll never forget it.
Ah, man, that was a beautiful montage from yesterday's season finale. That's right, the final day of Lansing United's 2015 season was a pretty good one. On a beautiful sunny afternoon in East Lansing yesterday, Matt Brown scored two in his final match for United, and Freddie Gomes sealed the deal with an incredible long-distance strike as United held off the visiting Erie Commodores 3-0. The win helped to end the season on a high note after a string of just really disappointing results. Isaac Constance was actually out there who talked to the respective players. Got a chance to talk with Captain Matt Brown in his final game. What was the atmosphere like, Isaac?
Oh, great attendance, first off. 852 people, so beautiful day. And it was encouraging to see that many people care about Lansing United, even though they had nothing to play for. The situation going into the game was that they were 5 points behind fourth place in their region. Of course, that's the Midwest region. So, and in soccer, a win is worth 3 points, a draw is worth 1 point, and a loss is worth 0 points. Mm-hmm. So they were actually 5 points behind the fourth place team, so they had no chance. Game really had nothing on the line but pride and to play for their captain, Matt Brown, who was in his final game. But boy, did they. A 3-0 win against a good opponent. Brown scored a brace with two goals. And then Freddie Gomez had Lansing United's goal of the season with just a long-range strike from 40 yards out on the left flank. It's one of those shots that you never see a player take. So the fact that he made it was extra special.
I saw the highlights, and that was one incredible goal that I'm sure got the house rocking at the East Lansing Soccer Complex. You know what's so interesting this year? Because, again, they finished with a record of 6-4-2 in the NPSL in their sophomore year. And, you know, looking at their first season last year, I mean, it was so remarkable how far that team went. And, you know, it seems like the stars just aligned. And, you know, they're entering their second year. And I remember we had Eric Rutland on the show and we had Jeremy Sampson on the show in preparation before the year started. And they both talked about how the expectations naturally rise when you come off a year like that. Do you consider this year to be a disappointment, Isaac?
I don't, because the first year was a miracle, really. I mean, you look at it, if a mid-major team makes a Final Four, for example, if Butler makes that championship, mm-hmm. You don't expect them to make the championship next year. Of course they did. That's great. But this is a different scenario, and 9 of 10 times that doesn't happen. This is still a small team that's totally amateur because none of the players are actually paid to play for Lansing United, whereas at other NPSL clubs, players can get paid. And this team overachieved its first year, and it did well this year. It really did. They were only two games out of fourth place when it's all said and done. So Lansing United, hats off to them for another great season. Now, the main worry is replacing Matt Brown next year. Of course, he played his last game. So,
and what's his future? What is Matt going to be doing now?
Well, happy you asked, because Matt's actually planning to coach he got his UEFA Coaching B license, and that basically allows him to coach for any professional licensed team in Europe.
Okay.
So, UEFA. Actually, I noticed in your headliners you said UEFA.
Yeah.
Soccer heads call it UEFA.
Oh, so, I'm sorry. I apologize, soccer heads. And yeah, you are a soccer head, Isaac, so thank you for that correction. UEFA is what they call it. Okay.
Yeah, so he'll go on to coach, but great career at Lansing United, 17 goals in 27 games. That's incredibly efficient, and he's just an excellent player. They'll have trouble replacing his leadership as well as his quality.
How about that? All right. Well, salute to Jeremy Sampson, Eric Rutland, and the entire Lansing United team as they finish up their sophomore year. What was the atmosphere like at the East Lansing Soccer Complex yesterday, Isaac?
Oh, it was just a lively affair. After the game, they unveiled a banner for Matt Brown that said, "Forever a captain." Everybody stayed. Kids got autographs and pictures. It was fantastic.
And I saw the banner, and whoever drew that banner or had the artwork for that banner, pretty cool stuff. It looked just like him. So great, great stuff. I'm seeing here breaking news. Jordan Spieth misses playoff by one shot at the Open. Zach Johnson, Mark Leishman, and Luis Oosthuizen will go to a playoff. This is taking place live on ESPN. So Johnson, Leishman, or Oosthuizen will be your British Open champions. I'm sure everyone is awaiting this playoff. It's going to be pretty cool stuff. I'm seeing here is Zach Johnson is on the practice course right now and the putting green, chipping, getting his stroke right, and getting his mind right as they prepare to go to extra holes. This is going to be fun to watch. Really, I'm really pulling for Jordan Spieth, though, man, because it's been really cool to see if he could pull off winning his fourth major in 1 year. All right, quick weekend winners, where we take a look at the weekend that was in sports and bring to you who we thought had the best weekend. Here we go.
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it. That's the great thing about sports. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. And nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down.
All right, Isaac. As we approach the final minute here on the show, just one weekend winner from me. I want to give a shout out. And I actually will be heading to DeWitt High School later on today to bring you guys a feature on this. But the DeWitt Varsity Cheer Team has been invited by the Japanese government to participate in the 39th All Japan High School Cultural Festival. A pretty cool story. Again, you'll catch the feature of that later on in the week. But I want to shout out the DeWitt Varsity Cheer Team. They are fantastic, Isaac.
I'll really quickly. Stephen Cummings won a stage this weekend for MTN Quebeca in the Tour de France. It's the first South African team to really garner all these awards. He's outstanding, and he won it on Mandela Day, who's my role model. So shout out to him.
Gotta love that. Thanks so much to all of you out there for tuning in to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care, and be easy, people.